Mr. Lowndon, Reel 33. So you got back to D Company. Were you a platoon sergeant?
That major stayed. He told me, he said, to what platoon did you have? I said, 18, originally. So he said, I wanted to go back to 18. He said, for the time being, he said, you won't have an officer. He said, you will have one later on, but he said, not for the time being, you won't. You won't have an officer. He said, the medical officer's been in touch with me, and he said, it seems that you've got a, he's watching your progress. So he said, I've deliberately, I've arranged it this way, he said, because he said, I'm only following the medical officer's advice. So I want you to have a free hand. And he said, don't worry too much about the the rights and wrongs, and you know, don't do this and don't do that. But he said, you know what you've got to do yourself. And he said, you've got two of your original section leaders there. He said, Tommy Gibbons was one, and of course, I'm not sure what his name is, Billy Hancock, anyway, it was somebody who came from the 14th or the 17th Battalion, DLI. They'd been in another platoon, they'd been transferred over to 18. So they were pretty good, they were okay. And so he said, you'll be alright, he said, you'll have a good backup, he said. And he said, just keep an eye on your own fitness, he said, and do what the medical officer tells you, he said, and you'll be alright. So he said, is there anything else you want to know? So I said, how long will it be before I get an officer? So he said, we won't worry too much about that. He said, in the early days here, meaning in Austria, he said, we've got to start going out looking for these bloody Jerrys. He said, it's all over the place. And he said, that's going to take us a little while. And he said, you'll get all the exercises you want off of that, I'm sure. But he said, it's not going to be done in 5 minutes. So he said, there's no need to worry too much about the officer situation and everything like that. He said, because it's all going to be, there's not going to be very much spit and polish, I can tell you that. He said, we don't have time for that. Of course, little did he know that was all to come, meaning Vienna.
So, did you get out?
Yeah.
Could you describe those duties and how that
worked? Yeah, well, we were given, we used to be given, it was a daily thing. They had these compounds. I just erected these compounds. We didn't do it. It had all been arranged. You see, what had happened, there weren't that many, but the trouble was that they were spread out over a big area. They were only young Germans, really. Young soldiers, you might call them. But, you know, they'd been causing a lot of trouble to the ordinary people in Austria, and pinching the food and one thing and another, getting the chickens and generally looking after themselves, you know. And as a result of that, I'm afraid I didn't make very many friends. But anyway, there wasn't any. We were given this, what we were given, it was an area each day. We would have to go through that area, and then we were given an area the next day, and the next day, and so on. And so you just covered the, you know.
And this was open countryside?
Out of the countryside.
And how were you deployed? Were you deployed as a company?
Well, it was nothing hard and fast, but you had to at least to keep in some sort of contact with people. I mean, if I sent one platoon one direction and another platoon another direction, you would have to try and keep within reasonable distance.
And would you be on foot?
Oh, on foot, yeah. Oh, yeah, you couldn't do anything. Couldn't do anything on transport. Or no, we're all on foot.
Yes.
And then, of course, you see, sometimes, then, of course, you see, you used to find them. They used to be hiding all over the place. And once they were found, they had to be rooted out, and then you would have to organise that they would be put together and kept together. And then you had to use a certain amount of people to make sure that they didn't stray again.
Can you remember any specific incidents of finding these?
Not really, because they were ready to come out. They were ready to. They had enough of living like that.
And were they still armed?
Oh no.
Were they still in uniform?
No, still in uniform, but I mean, I still had a uniform on, but that was all. And it was pretty filthy, you know. They were in terrible state, really.
And did they ever resist?
No.
So they were happy to be?
Yeah. No, it was just like the eye tie touch again. You know, the hands on the head. They were more than willing.
And you were saying that these were very young soldiers?
They were young, yeah. I mean, reading. I mean, a lot of ours, I mean, there weren't that many, not that many, when you sort of sift them out. I mean, a lot of our reinforcements were all youngsters, all 18, 19, 20, you know. I mean, we thought we were veterans, and we were about 23, which was nothing, you know. But there you are. I mean, that was just the difference, you know.
So
the same.
So you were on this duty. How long do you reckon you were doing that for?
That took the best part of a month, I should think, by the time. Because you never covered the same ground. Some days you'd go on completely different ground altogether. Different direction as well, you know.
Did you have any contact with the Russians that were fighting for the Germans at this stage?
No.
The Cossacks?
The only Russians I came in contact with were the ones who were in the sector, the Russian sector of Vienna.
Oh, well, we'll get to that, but so you don't remember, you had no involvement with
this was all they were very much like our own, and most of the majority of ours, but if on the younger side, you see, we'd taken all these reinforcements, and they were all young. These Germans were the same.
So when you got these Germans, you would take them back to where?
We were taken back, and they would be put in the compound. And then, of course, the same procedure would follow the next day. But you would go to a different place, different area entirely the next day. And once the compound got reasonably full up, these German prisoners were then put on a train and sent back to Germany. Well, that was easy because we were very close. We weren't that very far. We weren't very far from Velden, but a matter of a few miles. But it was easy enough to get them on the train. You could get a train and the old cattle truck things. and whack them onto the train, and once they were on the train, they were someone else's responsibility.
So it was your responsibility to get them on the train, the DLI. Was there any of them that didn't want to go?
Oh no.
They're all
Nobody built at all. They knew that the war was over. They knew very well they didn't have anything to worry about. There was nobody to be frightened of in Germany. There's nobody to be scared of in Germany. There was no Kesselring and Hitler and none of them. They were all gone. The war was finished.
So what was their morale like after they were captured?
Pretty low, pretty bad.
Still.
But they were cheerful enough. They were alive. That was the main thing.
How did you get on with the locals?
All right, very well. We used to get on well with them because you see, the army, whoever it is who organises these things, have done them a big favour. You see, we've taken these places, for. Like in Belden and these other companies, we've taken the various buildings and that, and they were being well paid for it. So, oh no, we got on more like with them. Oh yeah, there was never any shortage ever. So, never. They do us really a favour if you want any eggs or anything like that.
Were there any official orders about non-fraternisation?
Yeah, there was. You weren't supposed to. That was the golden rule about the fraternisation, that you see, as they were partly German, which I suppose they were, the same rules still applied.
What was the rule?
Well, the thing was that you weren't supposed to fraternise with them. That was to become too friendly. And I think that's what basically all it meant.
And did people become friendly with them?
Not really. Not really. There were cases of one or two of the younger, more reckless type, who sometimes fancied having a night out or something like that. If they met somebody or other, what they would then do would be to make themselves absent for X number of hours, you see. Well, I mean, if that was found out, then the inevitable happened, that they would be charged and they would be punished for it. That was just like an ordinary absentee, not an absentee, but you're absent without leave.
And so there were examples of that happening.
There were examples. Yeah. Oh yeah, I mean, that had to be. I mean, that really, and take the case of Tommy Baker for example, in Rye. It was a classic case of that, wasn't it?
Now you were on this duty of gathering up the remnants of the German army.
Yeah.
Did you have any other duties at this period?
No, that was the main one. That was the main one, because when I first got back, the company commander told me, he said, that's going to be the priority. He said, we've got to clear these bloody Germans out of it, he said, once and for all.
And so you
can't be satisfied until we've got them. And he said, I don't know how long it's going to take, but he said, that is the priority.
So you did this for about a month, and then
I should say all of that. Yeah.
And then what happened?
Well, we once we got that, and then that had all been sorted out, and they were so confident about it, everything had gone all right. They took the compounds that had been built. They took them down, and I got them put up specially. It must have been a special group that put them up. Nothing to do with us, we didn't do it. But I took them down, and we never saw them again. Then we went back to you know, like to our own company areas. And we never got, I can't speak for the other companies, but our company commander never cracked the whip much. He called us all in, and once we got the prisoners out of it, he called us all in and he said, well, we haven't got any sort of a timetable. He said, I don't propose to go back to the old training methods or anything like that. He said, we're not talking about exercises and things like that. He said the main thing is, he said that everybody's got to be kept fit. He says, but he said, what I want to emphasise, he said, is that you've got to, these people have got to be fit. And he said, I'm not saying they're not fit now, because he said, otherwise they wouldn't have been able to go roaming around like they have done so far. But he said, it's got to be kept up, the standard's got to be kept up. And he said, I'll leave it to you to use your own methods. And there's several things. He said you could do regular PT sessions, route marches, whatever, you know. And he said, that is the general aim, he said, at the moment. He said, we're not asking any more than that. And he said another thing, and then of course the secret came out, what I said earlier, about the nappy rations. All of a sudden they said, there's one more thing. He said, because of the our activities in the line, he said, and one thing and another, he said, of course, he said, the nappy rations of which we should have had, or which you should have had, because Steve wasn't with us earlier or anything. But anyway, he said, what we should have had. He said, we shall find that they'll catch up with us. So he said, you can be ready to have a few goodies coming through with the normal. And he said that they're going. And he said another thing is that you probably get nappy rations perhaps once a week or 10 days, as against once in a blue moon, like he's been having them. So he said it's going to be a regular thing anyway. So it's to be credited that the stuff is there, and it's got to be dealt with, got to be taken. So he said you can tell them that, he said, there'll be plenty of stuff coming through. No need to be anybody. There's no need for anybody to be short of anything. He said, well, it's washing, toothbrushes, washing of soap, flannels, towels, anything, whatever. He said, it'll all be there. And he said, so there's no excuse, he said, for anybody to be scruffy. He said, they're going to have every chance that they can do what they want to, what they should do. And he said, above all, he said, everybody's got to be kept fit. So that was it. That was our words from him. And of course he was 100% right about these nappy rations. And there was no end of stuff going through.
So what did you get?
There's no end of stuff. I mean, you see, there's ordinary things. When I say ordinary things, like razors and things for washing, and little knickknacks for cleaning your gear, all sorts of things going through.
And this stuff was in short supply?
Well, previously we never saw it. Of course we didn't, because we couldn't carry stuff like that. So I know, we just never saw it.
And what about?
It was the same for everybody.
And was there food and cigarettes and things?
There were rations of them. I mean, if you could have as many cigarettes as you wanted. If you wanted 250, you could have 250. Over there, if you wanted them.
And these were all supplies that had been withheld when you were in the front line, and they were...
Well, they'd come up so far, but then they'd been held somewhere. being held somewhere, that nobody could cater for stuff like that. And you couldn't carry stuff like that about. I mean, you know, you only had that a certain amount of thing. You couldn't. The thing is, you see, some of this stuff had to be paid for. In any case, some of the blokes, especially in the line, you probably sometimes in the line you'd be wandering around, you didn't have any money in your pocket anyway. So, you know, I just couldn't issue them. It was a waste of time trying.
So you were issued with
oh, no end of stuff. Yeah. No. I found, you know, not me, but it was pretty obvious that. Now, the way we were situated, I'm talking about the our battalion now. I dare say it was the same as the rest of the brigade. The rest of the brigade was just the same. I dare say. And you see, we had the companies all spread out apart, and you had these different officers' mess and sergeants' mess. And then, of course, you see, you had things like booze. Well. There again, see, you know, with the increased natural rations, it was tins of beer. Well, that was more for the ordinary other ranks in the platoon, you know. If you wanted, they'd been in charge of that as well. But I mean, that was another thing. We never used to see tins of beer, and that all that stuff came up.
Can you remember what kind of beer it was?
No. I don't know.
Was it any good?
Well, all tin stuff, you know. But it was the handy tin stuff. We used to go like hot cakes. Oh, yeah.
So what was the atmosphere in the sergeant's mess like?
If you were a boozer, you were laughing. There was more booze there than you knew what to do with. But, I'll give you an example. They'd send the NACA rations up, say, like to our company. Well, Tommy Page was a colour sergeant in our company. Tommy Page would go and collect the NACA rations, and he'd have bottles of whiskey, rum, vodka, port, all sorts of things. I mean, bottles. Big bottles, not little, big ones.
It's about a foot high. Yeah.
To each company. Tommy Page would go and get ours for D Company, and he'd come back with all this stuff, and me, well, anybody like me, if I fancied a bottle of whiskey, all I had to do was go to Tommy Page and say, well, can I have a bottle of whiskey? And he said, yeah. Give him the money for it. Which was nothing, really. Normally they'd have paid a fortune for it here. You know. But it was next to nothing there. And he'd just do that. Well, no, he never paid for that. Never paid for that. He just goes to Tom Page and tell him, and he'd give you one. And I could have had, same as anybody, any sergeant, any other sergeant. But the same, could have had a bottle of this, a bottle of that, a bottle of something else, and take them with you, and do what you want with them.
Was there a temptation to get involved in the black market then, to trade?
Oh yeah, because I mean, so far as we were concerned, there was nobody to sell it to, because I mean, the point was that, I mean, we were out in the sticks, you see, I mean, those people out there, they were simple sort of people, they didn't want this stuff anyway, but... No, there was no market there as such, but it would have been in Belden. In Belden, it would have been, because they must have been quizzing that lot down there, because you see those people lived in a slightly different way. Oh yeah, but they see, but that was up to them. I mean, you know, he was there if he wanted it. He was there if he wanted it.
So
I've never seen so much stuff, honestly.
So, You mentioned early, you mentioned spit and polish in relation to Vienna. So was that your next move? From
well, Vienna came all of a sudden. Yeah, we were we were did as carried out everything that we were told to do. Everybody was reasonably happy. They were quite happy, and in the platoon and that. I didn't care that do whatever you wanted them to do. And then all of a sudden we were told about Vienna. Well, we didn't know, the first thing we got to know about that was I can't think of who it was now. But there was, whoever it was, the orderly sergeant of D Company. And for some reason he had to go into Wilden. I think it was. Yeah, that's right. That's how it first came out. Well, this was only a rumour. It came out as a rumour, but it was true, you see. Anyway, what happened was, he took a fatigue party down to the QM stores, which was in Wilden, Newman, Captain Newman, who was major when he died, wasn't he?
That's Bert Newman.
Bert Newman, yeah. That's right, I took a fatigue party down there for something. And whilst over there, somebody did something. It was something to do with the dress. I'd gone on for some sort of fatigue, so they had denims on. But they also were also wearing the web belt. I don't know why they were wearing the belt. Anyway, they were wearing just the web belt. And something happened down whilst over there, and it was to do with this belt, you see. Somebody picked this, and either taken the belt off and put it down somewhere, couldn't find it or something. It was all to do with this belt. Anyway, Newman found it. He didn't find it. Someone else found it. Found the spell. So then Newman let Newman, you see, he was in the know. And he knew that we were going to Vienna. He wasn't supposed to tell anybody, but he knew. And in a strange sort of way, he let it out. It's something to do when I said about spit and polish. It was something sort of along those lines, you see. So then it came out, and nobody had spoken about Vienna. Nobody has mentioned Vienna. And in a strange sort of way, it came out. This fatigue party came back. And see, it just shows you how easily these rumours start. You know, the bloke who had lost his belt and eventually found it, Newman was supposed to have said to him, when he's given his belt back, Newman was supposed to have said to him, well, you'll be needing that where you're going. He says, you need a belt in Vienna. You see, but he shouldn't have said that, but he did. But anyway, Nobody realised what significant Vienna was. We never thought of garrison duties in Vienna. Nobody had given it a thought. Nobody had even thought about Vienna. Nothing. So that was, in a roundabout sort of way, that's how it came out.